New Zealanders are involved in many visionary endeavours overseas, and we hear about them only sometimes. Literally visionary is what Auckland ophthalmologist Dr. Stephen Best is doing right now in Mongolia. He's volunteering on behalf of the Sight for All charity. Hundreds of millions of people on the planet are blind or vision impaired because they can't wear glasses. For instance, nearly 90% of blindness is avoidable. Women lose their sight more than men do. And a full 20% of all vision impairment occurs in younger people, too, under the age of 50. That sets the scene. Dr. Stephen Best, hello.
Hello, Jim.
Where exactly are you?
So I'm currently in Ulaanbaatar, which is the capital city of Mongolia, anticipating very cold weather because this is just early spring. But in fact, it's been a little bit warmer. I've even seen blue sky, and it was up to 12 or 13 degrees in the afternoon day before yesterday.
They call Ulaanbaatar the coldest capital in the world, don't they?
Coldest and one of the highest, but certainly coldest capital in the world.
It's a big city. You're a long way up. There's a lot of traffic outside your window.
There's a huge amount of traffic. So 1.5 million people live in Ulaanbaatar, whereas the total population of Mongolia is around about 3.5 million. Auckland City, I guess, is a similar size, but the traffic here is absolutely diabolical. It makes Auckland traffic look really tame. In the mornings when I get picked up by the team, we often spend as much as 45 minutes in the car just to go a few kilometres.
Yeah, I never thought I'd be grateful for Auckland traffic, but yeah, as you say, it's a sight outside where you are. So it's not too cold. In any case, you can buy high-quality cashmere jerseys there, can't you?
You certainly can, and absolutely amazing. In fact, one of the participants in the course was saying to me that he had heard that New Zealand had a lot of sheep, and I said, yes, about 25 million sheep. And he laughed and said, we have 90 million domesticated animals, of which a good number of them are Angora goats for making the cashmere.
We used to have a lot more sheep. I hope you mentioned
exactly.
This. Now, you've been...
I did.
Before I get to talk about your work, I understand you've been to the Genghis Khan Museum, which is brand new, and it's quite something to visit.
Absolutely amazing. It's very close to where I'm staying in the Blue Sky Hotel, where I'm sitting on the 17th floor, just looking out over the city, which is relatively drab because of spring and very much a Soviet influence. So in comparison, the new Genghis Khan Museum is brand new, 8 floors, the most amazing artifacts, but fantastic history. And what I hadn't quite realized was just how big Mongolia is currently and how big it has been in the past. At the height of the Mongolian dynasty, they extended from Korea and Japan and the Pacific Ocean right across to the Persian Gulf. And this was partly because Genghis Khan's two sons initially went east and west, and then their additional sons expanded the empire, mainly to make sure that the Silk Road was maintained for commerce and trading. And obviously they did that. You will probably recall that Genghis Khan was responsible for uniting some of the nomadic tribes to create the kingdom of, or the dynasty of Mongolia at that time.
Speaking of empires, we don't realise, well, we do realise they rise and fall. We don't always realise how much that might pertain to the current age we're in. It's probably something you've been thinking about when you read up the history.
Exactly.
What exactly are you doing there, please?
So I'm here on the auspices of Sight for All. This is a ophthalmology eye care charity based out of Adelaide in South Australia. And they realized that what was really important was teaching. The old maxim, you can go somewhere, catch fish for a day and feed people for a day. But if you teach them to fish, you feed them for their life. So this program is designed to teach ophthalmology at an advanced level in developing countries. As far as I'm aware, Sight for All has expanded through many places in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Myanmar. I previously been to Vietnam, Cambodia earlier this year, and Myanmar 6 years ago before it became closed. They recognize particular areas where we can give additional help in ophthalmology in terms of subspecialty training. So I look after patients who have problems at the back of their eye related to their optic nerves, but also patients who end up having problems within their brain, which reflect in aspects of eye care. So this program is what's called an in-country teaching fellowship program. It's arranged to go for around 12 to 14 months, and volunteer ophthalmologists like myself, termed visionaries, spend a week at a time.
Is a week long enough to upskill the ophthalmologists in Mongolia? I mean, it must be. I'm sure the program's well calibrated. There's a lot you can do in a week.
The way that we do this, Jim, is the syllabus is broken down into specific areas and spread out over the entire year. So each year, one of the visionaries gets given a topic. So my particular topic for this week is optic nerve. So over the 12 to 18 months of the program, there will be, I think, nine visits, maybe 10.
So you're pretty well playing tag. A lot of you are playing tag, and you're each teaching little aspects of the course. And at the end of the time, thanks to all the ophthalmologists who will follow one another, you'll inculcate far better neuro-ophthalmology skills into the practice in Mongolia. That's how it works.
That's exactly how it works. What I'm enjoying in particular is that I could come and deliver textbook-type lectures where we just read through the textbook, and they can pick that up at any reasonable textbook. But what I've been specializing in doing is teaching case-based histories. So I've got histories of patients that I've seen in over 30, 32 years in my practice that all illustrate certain aspects of my area of neuro-ophthalmology that I've been assigned to teach. And so I can show slides of the particular problem and talk about how we diagnose those problems and what issues created because of that and how we treated them.
It's a bit like running a med school where all the teachers, all the lecturers come and visit and then go away and then maybe come back again. It's a fascinating concept.
It's in fact, talking of that, part of the program yesterday, I got taken to the main medical university headquarters. Hadn't been at a medical school for a long, long time, but there are all of these young medical students walking around in white coats and made me feel particularly old.
Particularly important is the reaction you should have had. Just vis-a-vis the traffic outside your window, do they wear helmets on motorbikes in Mongolia? I mean, we don't think of this, but I was reading there's a lot of eye damage from motorcycle accidents, which I never knew.
There is, and in fact, there's a lot of people here that don't wear helmets. Seeing a helmet here is very unusual. And if I just digress, I spent a week doing the same teaching in Cambodia in February, and virtually maybe 20% of people wearing helmets, motorbikes everywhere, entire families on motorbikes, 2-year-old child sitting on the front in front of dad, 2-year-old holding on to the handlebars, and then the 5 or 6-year-old in between mum and dad behind and just weaving in and out of the traffic, no helmets. And at that particular hospital in Phnom Penh, I ended up seeing two or three patients who had traumatic optic neuropathy as a result of motorbike injuries. So you're absolutely right. Motorcycles and eyes and head injuries are not a good combination.
No, they're not, are they? So you've been to Vietnam, you've been to Myanmar as well, as well as the countries you've mentioned. What results have you seen? Because this isn't your first rodeo, as it were. This is work you've been doing for a while. So what results do you see, Stephen?
I often tell a little story. I've been in Myanmar, as I said to you, and I've only been home for maybe 3 or 4 months. And I got an email from one of the trainees, dear Dr. Stephen, I just want to let you know that today in clinic, I saw a patient with what appeared to be compressive optic neuropathy, just exactly as you taught us. I organized for her to have a scan, showed her tumor, and sent her off to the neurosurgeons and saved her life. Thank you very much.
Ah, oh, gee, it's very satisfying work, isn't it, when you get messages like that?
When you get a call back like that, you realize that what you're doing is making a difference, for a lot of people.
Well, they're looking after you well up there. It's an important trip medically, but you're also having a bit of fun from the sound of it.
I'm being very well looked after. I've been taken out to interesting meals, Mongolian diets, which are fascinating. a lot of meat. And tonight I'm going to a concert. We're being taken to the National Mongolian Art Center, which is just across from where the hotel is, which is right beside Big Open Square where Parliament buildings are. And we'll hear traditional Mongolian music, including Mongolian throat music, which I understand is something to listen to.
Yeah, I understand that is too. I've only dimly heard of it, but I'm sure you're right there. It'll be a marvellous experience. Very good to talk with you, and very especially good to find out about the great work you're doing, Dr. Stephen Best. Thank you very much for your time.
It's been a pleasure, Jim.